Hello, and welcome to the Practice Networks podcast. I'm Sam Taylor-Smith, and this is George Grenville.
Hello.
Today, we're going to be talking to Simon Gale and Emma Field, and we're very excited to have them both here. Hi, guys. How are you doing?
Very well, thanks. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, good. Thank you. Nice to be here.
Today, the topic is going to be design thinking. Emma. Woo. Yeah. Woo! So we start every episode with a check-in. Jules, would you like to lead?
Sure. So check-ins are part of how we model trauma-informed care and trauma-informed working. They allow each person to take time to consciously think about and vocalise how we are. They allow each individual to think about different things that we find difficult or triggering. And the day that we're having really has an impact on how you're able to engage with your surroundings, really. So that's why having a check-in at the beginning of something like this is really important. So I can go first. I am feeling warm, as is always the case in the podcast suite. But I'm really excited to be here and to discuss design learning with everyone here. So over to, who am I going to choose?
Who wants to go first? Yeah.
Simon, a little bit of a check-in of how you're doing today.
I'm good, thank you, Jules. I am warm as well. I'm excited to be here. It feels like quite an alien environment with headphones and microphones and leads everywhere.
But you do get used to it.
Yeah, but hopefully I'll relax into it in a minute. It's very strange having my voice booming in my ears.
Mm. And what's inspiring you at the moment, Simon?
Ooh, what a great question. I, at the moment, love women's football.
Okay.
And I find that really inspiring. I've got into it because my two of my girls are really into it.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it feels very I'm a big football fan, but it feels very different from men's football in lots of good ways. So I'm really inspired by that.
Fantastic. Thank you. Emma, how are you doing today?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. I think the same as Simon in terms of alien environment, but around such lovely people, it's really nice to be with you. And then like an extra thing for check-in is I am like mid-cycle of my menstrual cycle.
Okay.
And you get, for me, I can get a bit more, a bit tireder, a bit more foggy, head foggy. So if I'm not clear on anything today, please do like ask me more questions.
Yeah.
So yeah, I kind of do like to talk about that kind of thing, because I have something called premenstrual dysphoric disorder, PMDD, and it affects how you show up, but you can still show up. So I think it's like a nice thing to check in about.
Great. Yeah.
Thanks, Emma.
And what's inspiring you as well, Emma?
I think I'm always inspired when I get to learn from other people.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to the gym at the moment, and I've had some personal training sessions, and talking with my personal trainer, he has such a different perspective than me on how much we can push ourselves, I suppose, and how much structure we need to help us perform. And that's really interesting. It's very different from a kind of more nurturing side that I tend to get from people.
Yeah.
So that, yeah, being in a student kind of position is very good and sparks lots of ideas about, how can I transfer that to my work and to supporting other people? So that's what's inspiring me at the moment.
Absolutely, thank you very much. Jules, did you say what was inspiring you?
I didn't, I forgot that. So I also work on a project called Brighton & Hove Common Ambition, which is a lived experience-led health and systems improvement project. Mm. Very long to say each time.
Mm-hmm.
We had a little celebration event for the project yesterday, and a lot of our members kind of quite spontaneously actually got up and said some words about the project, which was very inspiring and moving. Yeah.
Fantastic.
And you, Sam, you're checking.
Yeah, thank you. As always, warm, very warm, but feeling good and always inspired in our role in the support sector. Bloomin' love this job. And what is inspiring me at the moment? I've just pulled it up because I wanted to get the name right, but reading a fantastic book for our activists book club at the moment, Playing for Time, Making Art as If the World Mattered by Lucy Neal. And there was basically it's a really proactive, very holistic approach to really heavy themes. Mm. You know, people can be quite scared to talk about climate change and and really engage with it sometimes. But very early on in the book, Paul Allen has an argument that coal is just a massive deposit account containing millions of years of concentrated ancient sunlight. And so the power of a million suns, that's why man chose to sort of unlock it in the first place, you know, unlock its power. And I actually thought that was a beautiful, poetic way to think of sort of fossil fuels, funnily enough, that, you know, we're re-unlocking the sun's power. But 10 out of 10 would recommend Playing for Time by Lucy Neal. It's a fantastic book. And again, I was quite scared to get into Hilary Cottam's Radical Help when we read that, and it was fantastic. So another really worthwhile book about the sports sector as well. So
sounds good.
Good.
Really good check-ins.
So Simon, what's your role at Just Life?
Thanks, Sam. So my role is chief executive, and that means I have the privilege and honour of leading the organisation and working together with my wonderful colleagues to help us achieve our vision.
Welcome.
Thanks.
And Emma, you are our esteemed first guest to not work for Just Life. So
very exciting.
Tell us about you and what do you do?
Yes, so I'm working as a freelancer for Just Life, and I'm a service designer and facilitator. So with Just Life, we're focusing on design thinking, which is bringing, we'll talk a little bit more about that in a minute, but it's working with the team to uncover challenges and needs, and then together co-create solutions to those. And I think my role as a service designer, but as somebody who supports other people to do service design, is to kind of facilitate, hold that space, help move people through the process. So it's kind of a bit of a learning development role as well.
Yeah.
Which isn't necessarily what you would do if you were just doing service design. So another thing I do is sometimes for organizations, I will just provide the service design skill. So I might do research for an organization, or I might run workshops to facilitate co-design with people with lived experience, with stakeholders. With Just Life, and what I prefer doing is supporting internal team members, either to do that work themselves and like upskill people to do it and give confidence to do it, or look internally at what challenges can we identify internally that we can co-create solutions to. So it's kind of a more of an upskilling, empowering role.
That was exactly the word I was just going to use, was empowering. And I think that's what you do quite well, is you're holding the space for a team to learn together as well. I think a lot of it is facilitation and holding space, is my understanding of it for this project.
That's really good. Yes, I'm really good. Glad it feels like that. And I think there's links with what you do in Common Ambition, because you're holding that. I can't, and what you do for networks.
Yeah.
You're facilitating, holding space. You're seeing the strengths in others, and you're trying to create environments and connections and give whatever input will help to make the most of those strengths.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what I'm doing, but for you. Yeah. So for the people who do that, how can I help you do that?
And so, Simon, why do you think that's important for Just Life?
I think the landscape that we find ourselves in society right now means that there's a lot more need for charities to exist. There's a lot more people that need the support of organisations like Just Life. There's a lot less resources from local national government and individuals. And I think as charities, we need to be as clever as possible with our resources, with the skills that we have amongst our teams. And be really intentional about learning from other sectors and industries as well. I suppose what I'm passionate about is building an organisation that is really in its best possible shape to help people that are in temporary accommodation have experiences that are short, safe and healthy. So anything that we can do as an organisation that helps us develop, use our skills in the best way, even though we're a small organisation, have a bigger impact, I'm really keen on. And ever since I first heard about design thinking, which I think was when I first met Emma, I've been really keen to involve it within the life of Just Life. And over the last couple of years, we had an opportunity with one of our funders who wanted to help us build our capacity as an organisation to bring in Emma to try and embed some of these tools and skills into what we do. And I think, as Emma said, we could get someone in like Emma to run some projects for us, but I was just definitely really keen for us to see it as a learning and development opportunity for staff as well, so that it's not, you know, just dependent on a freelancer coming in or a couple of staff that like the idea of it and then leave in a few years, but something that can become embedded in the organisation, I guess.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Thank you. Am I right in thinking that you trained as an occupational therapist, Anna?
I did, Sam. Yeah. I've had quite a few different careers that have kind of come together. I think, so yes, occupational therapy, I think, has got a huge link with service design and design thinking, at least in the way that I do it.
Yeah.
Because really, so the end goal of design thinking, service design, human-centered design, whatever we call it, is to solve a challenge. And how we use it in the not-for-profit sector is to solve people's challenges that are real and like important. So in terms of occupational therapy, that's also our interest. And it's, so solving those kind of challenges is often about, we're trying to create environments or conditions for sometimes for behavior change, for culture change. That's really difficult. I think we need to understand how complex that is, because that's individuals trying to change. So if you think, I talked about a personal trainer earlier, because for me, it's really hard for me to make those kind of health-based changes that I know are good for me, but it's hard for me to make all the habit changes on my own.
Yeah.
And I've tried to. So then you think, okay, how can I get help to do that? And I think that's the same as occupational therapists do for people when they're struggling. So occupational therapy is around helping people to live the best lives that they can, do what they want to be able to do, they want and need to do. In the health sector, we're often working with people at extreme need because of demand. But I think if we can do bring some of that work, helping staff live the best lives, but do the best work they can, so create those conditions, those systems for change, and then support individuals to change as well, make any changes they need, what's in my control.
It's about creating the environment
creating conditions for change.
Exactly. Yeah. And I would say service design, coming from that angle, we can identify changes that need to be made. And in the past, I have worked for a consultancy, great consultancy, and I have worked in other organisations. And sometimes, because of the funding that we have, we get to a recommendation stage. So we might come up with brilliant ideas, and then we can leave them with the organisation to hopefully do something. And then I know from working in kind of more frontline work in the past, from working in those organisations, that the actual how to implement that idea and create change is so complex after that. You need support to be able to do that piece of it. So I think that's where service design and occupational therapy can come together as well. It's thinking the granular, this is our ambition, but how do we actually achieve that?
And I think that's why it fits so well for Just Life, having that OT background, because you have an understanding of what frontline work is and what kind of social care, social work and social sector is and does. I also think it's really great having someone externally come in and do some of that work, as someone who is non-biased, in just, non-biased in within the organisation. I think that's really good to have that kind of mediation role. Especially as Just Life is in a state of growth as well. So I think it's really helpful that we have this in place. And really innovative. I think it's really great how innovative it is and how open Just Life is to the innovation of it all as well.
That's what's really impressed me, I think, from my time with the organisation. I mean, Simon, you're here, so it's not just to say, oh, this is awesome. But it has been incredible to see that you are excited for what Just Life could be, will be. It seems to not just be changing, but evolving in that regard. And I think it's wise that we don't lose sight of the fact that the health engagement workers are obviously, you know, they're still the core of Just Life's purpose. And as we learn from Sarah, just what a remarkable job she does. But the outreach, the expansion of it all, the policy, the research, the networks, it just seems that it's making sure that they all grow in the right directions, but it's still cohesive.
Yeah, so for sure, at Just Life, we've never been interested in just growing for the sake of it. We're really just keen on whether what we can do can bring more impact to the vision that we're trying to achieve, which is all around making temporary accommodation short, safe and healthy for people. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a bit of a cliche, but I think we are a values-led organisation. And I think design thinking and service design really feeds into or plays into our values really well.
Yeah.
Because they're around people, collaboration and innovation, which are all aspects of design thinking. So I think it really works well from that point of view. I love the idea of bringing creativity into the organisation as well. And the idea of, or the need to sort of tweak things that are going okay, but could be better, mm-hmm. to testing things rather than maybe previous models of work where you come up with an idea and then you just get on with it and carry on doing it until, you know, you run out of money or something. But sort of constantly evolving. And I think the evolving is definitely the word for us as an organisation.
Mm. Fantastic.
And I think there's something quite horizontal, if that's the right word, in terms of power with design thinking. I think we'll probably talk a bit more about process and what design thinking looks like and define it maybe a bit more clearly, because I appreciate we all have a vague idea of what it is in the room. But there's really, it's about collaboration with, and everyone kind of comes into the space in an equal footing. It's a lot like co-production, really. Mm. Which I think is quite important to mention as well, that all voices in the room are equal and it is an open and honest space. And I think that's also the benefit of having someone external come in as well.
Mm. We've definitely seen that through the Common Ambition project that you've been involved in, Jules, which uses design thinking tools and approaches as well. And that's, you know, really brought sort of equal footing to everyone involved. Mm. And that's certainly something that we do have a hierarchy as an organisation, but we want everyone to be involved in as much as they want to be involved in terms of developing and evolving.
Yeah.
Just to pick a couple of those points then. So one, the values-led piece, absolutely. So, I mean, I've known Simon a while now and we've done some other work together as well. But Just Life values could also be service design thinking values, you know. Simon, can you say them for me so that
people before programs.
So that, absolutely.
Collaboration before competition.
Completely.
And innovation before institution.
There we go.
10 points.
Which is your house? Yeah.
So yes. So there's such a connection there, and then leading on from that point and talking about Jules's work with Common Ambition. It's the fact that Just Life and Just Life staff and teams are already working in this kind of a way. So me coming in isn't coming in to say, oh, there's this completely new thing called design thinking or elements of co-design that you've never heard of.
Yeah.
It's not like that here. It might be in some organisations, but you already work in that way. So I guess, in a way, when we started talking about, when Simon and I started talking about, well, what should this brief be for this piece of work together? Part of me was thinking, what do you need? Because I already think you're a great organisation and I see all the great things that you do and the new ideas that come up and that approach of, let's try something, let's test it.
Yeah.
You know, people having autonomy to try things out.
Mm.
So what I know from experience of supporting other people to do service design projects, so often it has been service design. The difference I'll just make there is I think design thinking is using the mindset, the skills, the process to whatever you want to use, whatever the output might be. And service design is more we're aiming for an end service. For example, a new homelessness group, a new something kind of client facing at the end is coming out of it. So my experience in supporting that kind of work is One, it always takes more time than people think it will take. There's a lot of behind the scenes work to get something like that running. Two, you end up working with one or two people from an organization who are super engaged. They often don't have very much time released from their day job.
Yeah.
And so it can end up an extra pressure. And I hate putting extra pressure on people in this kind of innovative work, which shouldn't be that. It should be a space of openness and curiosity to be in that right mindset. And then because the rest of the organization carries on as normal, it's difficult to spread the learning.
Yeah.
So we really wanted to approach it in a different way, first of all, because of that. So kind of, I was aware, let's look at foundations of things. You're doing great stuff anyway, but are there any foundational things that could improve that even more? Mm. And then the second thing was, because I wasn't sure of what exactly it was you needed, but know that there's a fit, let's go in as that kind of beginner mind and learning. So asking all the different teams to come together. We kind of had these different learning conversation workshops sessions where people would come together and we'd talk about what are the challenges and the challenges to working in this way, in this kind of open, collaborative, innovative, build and learn way that we saw design thinking as encompassing. And when do you do it? And how?
Yeah.
So we could start identifying, okay, here are some challenges we need to work at to make it even better. Here's when it works best. How much can we replicate and spread that?
Mm. And yeah. So that's the what and
that's
the why.
The what.
Okay. And I suppose the journalistic questions, how? We had a really fantastic session on Thursday.
Yes.
And that was with the networks team, which is Kate, Jules and I.
Woo.
Let's hear it for the networks team. Is it that one? No. Let's hear it from the networks team. Oh, well. Hold that thought. There you go. Let's hear it from the networks team. And we really had an opportunity with you, Emma, to sit and think about what we are good at, what we're bad at, what we enjoy. And I think there are quite a lot of subjects that people can be quite scared to engage with. I think if you've been doing your job for any more than a couple of years, if you're into your career, you can kind of calcify into your position, you know? And I think one of the most exciting things about being the Practice Network's development lead is I've been given opportunities I've never had before. I mean, here I am hosting a podcast and with my CEO and, you know, with exciting freelancers and my wonderful colleague as well. And I think just being able to really have the chance to run with something, hopefully Jules had the same experience I did, but I was able to then go away after our time on Thursday and think, wow, what don't I enjoy? And that's like really empowering is the word, but exciting as well. You know, because you think, okay, well, this is an opportunity for us to agree, you do this, I'll do that. And that's not just more efficient for a team, but that's healthy, happier workers, right?
Oh, I love that. So just a little bit of detail on that one, so we're doing this... we've called it Design Together. I don't know if we've said that yet. So for Just Life, we've branded it as Design Together as a way of bringing design thinking, using design thinking in the organisation. And we kind of did some planning work over the summer, and then it kicked off in October with this research phase, really, of a series of maybe 5 learning conversations.
Okay.
Simon and I separated them into similar functions, teams that had similar functions, and brought people together, like I said, asked about how you kind of currently use these elements of design thinking in your work, challenges, barriers to doing that, and kind of enablers, or when it works really well.
Hmm.
We've got this research phase, but before we started the research phase, we kicked off with our working group. So the Design Together working group is, like Simon said, he was inviting anyone from the organisation who is interested in doing this kind of work, kind of being more of the core team to lead and shape what comes out of it, basically. Come along to the working group, and I think we were kind of aiming to do a session once a month until the end of this phase, this kind of research co-design phase.
Mm-hmm. And that seems like a really good place to split this podcast up. Emma, Simon, Jules and I had a really fantastic conversation about design learning at projects in the Brighton Lanes. And well, in episode 4, we've considered the what. In episode 4.5, we'll really get into the why and the how, taking a step back, the bigger picture of it all. If you have any questions about the Practice Networks podcast, please do send them over to sam@justlife.org.uk. If you need bespoke resources or help, or you want to be connected with anybody else in your community, just let us know. The sound effects and the music are from Upbeat, and they are the Whoosh Smooth Swish by Lochran and Happy Feet Sound Roll. We recorded this podcast lovingly at Projects in the Brighton Lanes. Have a fantastic day, everybody.